Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. There's a Reuters story with an interesting headline. Malaysian court rules use of Allah, the word, exclusive to Muslims. Now, of course, Malaysia is in a part of the world that is dominated by Islam politically. So it doesn't really surprise to read something like this. But what does it mean? Why? What kind of thinking goes into, not the legal thinking, because we don't know the court system, but what kind of religious thinking goes into a decision in a Muslim-majority country that the word Allah is off-limits to all but Muslims? Joining us to talk about this story and perhaps explain some of it to us, Dr. Adam Francisco. He's Associate Professor of History and Political Thought at Concordia University, Irvine, California. He's author of the book Martin Luther and Islam. Dr. Francisco, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Can you explain to us what the religious thinking of the Muslim majority might be in this case to say, look, Allah is our word, and you Christians in particular in this case, can't use it?
Yeah, I think there's two religious reasons. About a year ago, this issue came before the court in Malaysia, and initially it was prompted by the concerns of the Muslim majority that Christians were using the term Allah as a way to bring Muslims or bridge the gap between Islam and Christianity in a way, or in a sense, they argued that Christians were using the term to proselytize Muslims and bring them within the Christian fold. The other reason, the more recent reason that's been given in the various news articles, is that Allah is a term specific to Islam. The problem for Malay Christians, though, is that the only word there is in the Malay language for God is Allah. So Christians have found themselves, at least legally, in a position where they can't speak of God. So they've got to come up with another term.
So we need to understand, and this isn't only true of Malay Christians, it's also true of Christians who live in, say, Arabic countries, the common generic word for God is Allah.
Yeah, and in the Arabic language, Allah is just simply, all is a definite article, means the. And ilah, it means God. It's a generic term for God. You put them together, it's not the name for God. It's basically synonymous for the word the creator. There are terms in Arabic, like Rab, which means Lord, that some Arabic-speaking Christians will use instead of Allah. But in Malay, I don't think they have that option.
Well, is this perhaps a blessing in disguise? I mean, even though they would have to come up with a different word, mm-hmm. would it at least remove any confusion there might be between Christians and Muslims in that context? What do you think?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I do think that is the case. I don't know. I've never been to Malaysia myself, but my suspicion would be that there is, I don't think there's a lot of hardcore syncretism, but there, when it comes to a Muslim-Christian dialogue, there is a lot of confusion over the question of whether Christians and Muslims worship the same God. And just that the term Allah, if Christians could come up or find another term, it might help separate the two religions and expose the vast differences both religions have in their understanding of who God is.
How vast is that difference, just for the sake of understanding between the two?
Yeah, the real quick way to describe it is in Islam, God is one in essence and also one in person. The Quran does not allow for God, as the Quran puts it, any partners. There's no division within God. There are no you can't have Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in Islam. Christianity, obviously, it's the opposite. God is one in essence, we confess, but he's three in person. So, I mean, that's the big difference. There are certainly lots of minor differences as well.
If Christians in Malaysia, let's just say for the sake of argument, they may be doing this. If they are saying, well, look, we use a common word for God, maybe that means we actually don't disagree so much on who that God is. Maybe, in fact, we might even be worshiping the same God. Using this kind of syncretistic tactic of evangelism, or so-called evangelism, where would that be incorrect?
Well, it linguistically, you know, you could, let's say you're in an Arabic-speaking region, a Christian could use the term Allah to refer to the Christian God. So linguistically, that's not really the problem, the term. It's what you mean by the term. And so when Christians purposely use the term Allah as they're speaking with Muslims and give off the impression that they're speaking the same God, that, I mean, I think that certainly it is a syncretistic approach. And so it's a bit dishonest when you're speaking with a Muslim, and doesn't represent Christianity that well either.
In more general terms, what does the passage, and really this is one that's been back and forth in the courts, but actually, you know, kind of finalized here in Malaysia, what does it tell you about how religious liberty, in a broader sense, fares when Islam is in the political majority?
Well, yeah, if Islam is in the political majority, the definition of Islam is submission. And when a Muslim speaks of Islam, they're not just talking about a personal submission to a, you know, certain theological system. It's an all-encompassing submission. And so when Muslims make up the majority and you have a government that is in some sense Islamic, the priorities set by that government, legal and other priorities, are going to be in accord with Islam. Islam is going to be treated as the not just the superior, but the only true religion. And so it's going to set the tone and the tenor to everything. Islam orders, and Muslim thinkers have said through the centuries that Islam should order every aspect of our life, and it should certainly inform the way Muslims view Christians. And by and large, historically, Christians have been seen as and treated as second-class citizens within Islamic polities.
By way of contrast, why would it be unthinkable for Christians, where they are in the political majority, to say, look, Mormons, you can't use the word Jesus because you don't mean what we mean by Jesus, or any other religion that would use the word Jesus and certainly not mean what Christians confess by using that name? Why would it be unthinkable to pass a law that way?
Well, you know, Christianity, you know, certainly there are exceptions, but by and large, Christianity has made a distinction between church and state, or the sacred and the secular realm. So, I mean, Jesus himself says his kingdom's not of this world, and so that doesn't mean Christians are completely separate from the political process. They certainly play a role in that, but our Christian theology, Christian priorities, I'm talking discrete Christian priorities, are usually, they don't fall within the realm of private beliefs, but they certainly aren't, they don't play a role in the political processes of the state. That's historically been the case within Christianity, with some exception.
And for Islam, is there, at least in the typical case, is there any kind of recognition of what we consider to be kind of axiomatic, that there is some kind of a distinction between the state and the mosque?
Typically, no. There's a phrase in Islam, in the Arabic-speaking world, that Islam is religion and state. To separate the two, at least according to the more traditional stream of Islamic thought, is to basically give priority to the state if it's, you know, if the machinations of the state are follow secular principles. It's to elevate that almost to the status as if it's a distinct entity and can therefore compete with Allah and his will. And so to ask Muslims to make that distinction or to separate church and state is essentially, from their perspective, asking them to leave Islam or leave, you know, Orthodox Islam. Now, there are certainly exceptions. There's a lot of Muslim thinkers today who are rethinking this fusion of mosque and state within Islam, but they still make up a small minority, and they only really are able to gain a platform in the Western world.
What would you advise Christians in Malaysia to do now? The various publishing enterprises that are affected by this law in Malaysia? What would you suggest?
Maybe they could use a more, maybe they could go use the Greek terms to refer to God, or they could use a more generic term like Lord. The Arabic term for Lord is Rab. That might work, or perhaps they could just refer to Jesus as God, as he was in fact, or and is in fact God. It's going to be tough for them, and they've got to be very creative, but at the same time very careful in how they do this. But I think they should simply go back to the scriptures and use more biblical terms for God.
Would you be surprised if this isn't something that's imposed in other places where Islam has a political majority and Christians are in the minority?
It wouldn't surprise me at all. It's curious, though, right next door in Indonesia, I seem to recall a year or two ago, there are places where Christians were actually ordered to use the term Allah in their liturgies when they referred to God. So it's an odd world when you look at Muslim-Christian relations, especially within the context of Islamic polities. But nothing surprises me anymore when it comes to some of the decrees that come from Muslim governments and how they relate to the Christian population.
Dr. Adam Francisco is Associate Professor of History and Political Thought at Concordia University, Irvine, California. He's author of the book Martin Luther and Islam. You can find out more about this book at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Adam, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're welcome.
When we come back, we're going to spend the last 10 minutes of the program on this Wednesday, October the 16th, with George Conger of GetReligion.org. He has some recent reflections on John Shelby Spong. John Shelby Spong, of course, is the former Bishop of Newark in the Episcopal Church, and in his day, he was, in fact, an advocate for things that have become, well, just garden variety Episcopalianism, at least in America. We'll be talking with George Conger about a recent piece, a puff piece from the Washington Post on Bishop Spong. Stay tuned. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, invites college undergrads to Christ Academy College and Phoebe Academy College, October the 17th through the 20th. It's a free weekend event that allows you to experience seminary life. For more information, visit ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Christ Academy College and Phoebe Academy College, October 17th through the 20th at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm. So check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
The sharpest arrow in your apologetics quiver. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.